Great. Well, today we're finishing off our series on purpose. We've been talking about the fact that when the love of Jesus encounters you, thank you. When the love of Jesus encounters you, when you realize what he's done for you on the cross, when that love overwhelms you, when it floods your soul, it gives your life new direction. Paul says Christ's love compels us. So when you become a follower of Jesus, your life now has purpose, a new direction, a new orientation. We've been talking about what that means in our lives. We've been talking about the fact that this purpose changes our worship. We take the crown off our head and we crown the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. That's what it means to worship. We live a life of worship intentionally. It means that our relationships with one another change because we live with God's compassion. We build a community where we love and serve and bless one another. We do life together. We've seen that we're called to be disciples, and disciple is someone who chooses to follow a master on purpose. They give their allegiance, they tie themselves to, they yoke themselves to a new master, and they let that master shape their lives, shape everything, every aspect of their lives. We've seen that we're called to be disciples. We've been called into relationship with Jesus. We've been commanded to live out the command of love, and we've been a commission to go make more disciples. We've seen that each of us is to be a custodian of the good news. Not everyone is an evangelist, but all of us are involved in evangelism. We share the good news. How can we help it? We can't help it because we've encountered Jesus. And when you fall in love, you can't shut up about it. It changes your life. And today we're talking about service. What does it mean to live a life of service on purpose? And we're going to go to John 13, which is where Jesus washes the disciples' feet, because this is probably the pivotal passage in the Gospels that define and position what service looks like in the life of the church. So if you have your Bible, I'd love you to open it up in John 13. Now, we're going to be looking at verses 1 to 17, and the last verse, this whole episode of the washing of the disciples' feet, finishes with Jesus saying, "Now that you know these things, you'll be blessed if you do them. Now that you know these things, you'll be blessed if you do them." And he's talking not you singular, sorry, not you singular, but you plural. Now that you guys know these things, you'll be blessed if you do them. Now that this community knows these things, the community will be blessed if you do them. It's all plural language, not Simon Peter. You'll be blessed, buddy, but guys, all of us, the disciples, will be blessed if you do these things. The 120 on the day of Pentecost will be blessed if you do these things. The 3,000 that repent and are baptized when Peter preaches the good news, they will be blessed if they do these things. All the churches the Apostle Paul writes to, every church, every community today will be blessed if they do these things. Jesus here is talking about what it means to create a community that is the community you've always dreamed of. We're all on the hunt for ultimate community, the community we've always dreamed of. I mean, isn't that what we're looking for? Like, all of us wants to belong to a group of people, a family, a small group, a squad, a tribe, a crew, a team, a town, a neighborhood, a school, a department, an office block, a class. We all want to belong to a group of people that is a beautiful, wonderful community. I mean, think about it. Like, why is high school so hard? It's because of the drama. It's because of the power plays, the politics, the in crowd and the out crowd. It's because of bullying and power plays. It's high school can be really awful. And what every kid who goes to high school is longing for is a kind of community that's inclusive, that's warm, where you're free to be yourself, where there's no bullying, where there's no pressure, where there's no power plays, no politics, no doublespeak, no nastiness, no none of the stuff that just wrecks community. Every kid is looking to be part of a beautiful community. I mean, this is why office politics are so awful, right? That's why we hate going to work when there's politics and drama at work. Because we're craving, we want to belong to that beautiful community. That's why family disputes or neighborhood disputes or civil court is such an awful, tragic situation, because we're all on the hunt for beautiful community. No selfishness, no ego, no politics, no power plays. Just a warm, inclusive community where there's no in crowd and out crowd, where it's just everyone is in. Everyone feels like an insider. Everyone feels valued. Everyone's opinion is valued. Everyone is free to uniquely be themselves, right? There's no pressure to conform, but rather you're free to be the best you can be. We're all searching for that kind of community. Diverse skills, diverse gifts. Everyone's opinion valued. No power, no politics, no ego, just community at its best. I reckon we would sacrifice personal success to be part of a wonderful community. Like, if you had the choice between a $10,000 pay raise at work or the office drama, the work drama being resolved, most people, I reckon, would actually choose to be part of a better community than have individual success. I would rather, you know, on my team, I'd rather not score any points, you know, in my basketball game and have my team win and be part of a great team than top score on a team full of people that hated each other. Like, we would give up personal success to be part of a beautiful community. Do you agree? We're longing for that. We search for that. I mean, think about what happens when they launch a new housing estate. Think about the posters and the TV ads. What do you notice about advertising for new housing estates? It's all portraying the perfect community. Usually there's no pictures of buildings. Have you noticed that? It's a family riding their bike through the park. It's someone throwing a frisbee. You know? They're selling community, a place to belong, a place where your neighbors are friends, where you have barbecues in the park and you wave to Bob as he drives past, you know? Think about all the Coke ads you've ever seen. They're actually not about the drink. They're all about a kind of community where you and your friends are just on some yacht in the Mediterranean, you know, doing backflips off the mast, and then someone throws you a Coke, throws a glass bottle to you in water. And the drink just reminds you that you're part of a beautiful community. Like, we're on the hunt for perfect community. We're desperate for it. And Jesus says, if you do these things, you'll be blessed. You'll be part of the church you've always dreamed of. You'll be part of a community where people love each other, serve each other, where there's no drama, no politics, no power plays, where every person is valued. Don't you want that? I do. And Jesus tells us how to get there. When he says, you know, I give you life and life to the full, it's not just individual life, it's community life. Christianity is a team sport. We're part of a family. We have brothers and sisters, right? So, if that's the end of the passage, what precedes it that leads us to this point where we understand what it means to be part of a beautiful community? We're in John 13. If you have a Bible, I'd love you to follow along. We're going to make our way through the passage, and at the end, we're going to try and pull it all together. John 13, verse 1. It was just before the Passover festival, and Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. Now, verse 1 here in chapter 13, it's a title verse for the next like four chapters, because chapter 13 is a transition point in John's gospel. Up until that, the first 12 chapters is often called the book of signs. All signs point to Jesus. Water into wine, feeding of the 5,000, raising of Lazarus, the good shepherd, like everything Jesus does points to the fact that all signs are pointed to the fact that he's the Messiah. Then here in chapter 13, there's this transition point and talks about the time has come. Jesus knew that the hour had arrived, that it was time for him to be glorified. And the second half of John is often called the book of glory. And it's about the wonderful thing that happens through the death and resurrection of Christ. The glory, God's love revealed, the most incredible moment when the grave opens and Jesus walks out resurrected. The greatest act of love, the cross. And here this transition point is happening and Jesus begins at the Last Supper. Verse 2, the evening meal was in progress. The devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. Now, we think this is the Last Supper meal. The other Gospels describe it slightly differently, but we're pretty sure this is the beginning of the Last Supper. And the Last Supper, Jesus washes their feet. Now, the etiquette in the ancient world is when you came to someone's house, if you were invited over for dinner, especially a special dinner, the etiquette was that a servant would greet you at the door. One servant would take off your shoes, undo your sandals, and another servant would wash your feet. Now, this is a pretty gross job because this is in the time before paved roads where there was horses and sheep and animals everywhere, where there was no antifungal cream, right? There was no treatment for warts. It is a disgusting thing to touch someone else's feet in the ancient world, right? It's gross. It's disgusting. So to take off someone's shoes at the end of the day is gross. The only thing more gross than that is washing their feet. And this is what Jesus does. In fact, there's this whole hierarchy of slaves. In fact, in some areas, a Jewish slave could not be made to wash someone's feet because it's too gross. It's like, no, we don't let Jews do that. Only kind of, you know, slaves from other places or servants from other places are allowed to wash feet. The hierarchy, the more favored slaves got the better jobs. The lowest of the low got the worst jobs. And the second bottom rung in the slave hierarchy, it's basically Downton Abbey, right? You understand? The second bottom slave, their job was to take off the shoes of the master and his guests. So when John the Baptist says, I'm not even good enough to take off the sandals of the Messiah, he's saying, I'm not even good enough to be the second bottom slave. He puts himself right at the bottom. The only slave lower than that, lower than undoing the shoes, is washing the feet. So when Jesus here washes the disciples' feet, he is humiliating himself. He is choosing to put himself at the very bottom of the food chain. He's not just the king who is enthroned, he's the king who stoops. He's the king who gets on one knee, who empties himself of his pride, who empties himself of his glory, his splendor, his status. The king who kneels down and washes the disciples' feet. It's an incredible, incredible picture. And it freaks the disciples out. Verse 6, he came to Simon Peter, who said to him, Lord, are you going to wash my feet? Translation, Jesus, what the heck are you doing? Jesus. He freaks out. Jesus replied, You do not realize now what I'm doing, but later you will understand. No, Peter said, you shall never wash my feet. Jesus answered, unless I wash you, you have no part with me. Picture the disciples, right? They're there with Jesus at the Last Supper, one of the most holy days of the year. Jesus is their master. He's incredibly famous. Everyone in Israel is talking about Jesus, and this is before Twitter, so it's a big deal, right? Jesus is so famous. He gets there, he takes off his outer garment, and they're like, Jesus, I don't think it's that hot in here. What's going on? They don't understand. It's weird. Then he goes to get a basin full of water, and they're like, surely this is about wine. Surely he's going to make some wine out of this. There's no other reason why Jesus would go and get a basin of water, especially while our feet are so dirty. Is it pre-dinner drinks? What's going on here? Right? Jesus puts a towel around his waist. And they're like, Jesus, this is, no, you can't. Jesus. He gets down on one knee. It is the most socially awkward moment you can imagine. It is the equivalent of at a fancy end-of-year dinner, your boss meets you outside the toilet cubicle and says, let me wash your hands, right? It's creepy, it's weird, it's awkward, it's embarrassing, it's humiliating. That's like, I can't put it into words, just how bizarre and weird this would seem to the disciples. So when Peter says, Jesus, don't be ridiculous. Like, you're our master, you're Jesus. We wash your feet, you don't wash our feet, and he won't do it. And Jesus says, you don't understand, but later you will understand. You see, Jesus is talking about the fact that washing the disciples' feet is symbolic. It's a symbolic prefigurement of the cross. He's saying, the way I'm going to cleanse you, I'm going to cleanse your feet by humiliating myself, by taking on shame, by taking on your grime and fungus and warts and whatever you stepped in. I'm going to take that on, and I'm going to humiliate myself, empty myself. I'm going to sacrifice myself, my dignity, my status, to cleanse you. And of course, that's what the cross is. The cross is Jesus humiliating himself. It's emptying himself. He is stripped bare. He's shamed. It's gross. It's weird. It's creepy. It's awkward. It's the cross. And Jesus is saying, the way I'm going to save you is by humiliating myself, by taking your place, by taking on your grime, by taking on your filth. I'm going to cleanse you, not by reigning and ruling from my throne in gold. I'm not going to start my kingdom by storming into Jerusalem and kicking out the Romans and sitting on David's throne and rebuilding the temple. It's not going to be about status and power. The way I'm going to save you, the way my glory will be revealed, is in humiliation, in sacrifice, in blood. You don't get it now, Peter, but you will. Soon you will understand the way I'm going to cleanse you, not of the sin on the outside, not of the grime on the outside, but the grime on the inside, is through a humiliating death and glorious resurrection. Jesus says, unless I wash you, you have no part in me. Unless I cleanse you, you have no part in me. He's talking not about eating dinner together. He's talking about the cross. He says, unless you let me humiliate myself, I can't clean you. I can't help you. I can't cleanse you. Verse 8, Peter's response, you will never wash my feet. Jesus answered, unless I wash you, you have no part with me. Then Lord Simon Peter replied, not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well. Jesus answered, those who've had a bath only need to wash their feet. Their whole body is clean. And you are clean, though not every one of you, for he knew who was to betray him. That is why he said, not every one of you. I was reflecting on Peter. You know, he's interesting because on one hand, he has no problem being served. Like in chapter 12, they're at Simon the leper's house. They have dinner together, which means they would have had someone take off their shoes, wash their feet, serve them food. Here's some bread, here's some wine. Peter has no problem being served generally, but he can't handle being served by Jesus, right? It's the fact that Jesus wants to serve him, wants to humiliate himself, that Peter has an issue with. And for Peter, his issue is pride. I don't know if you've realized that before in this passage, but his issue is pride. Because on one hand, he's totally cool having minions, right? He's totally happy to have people serve him, to wait on him hand and foot. I mean, we kind of get that, right? I mean, like, don't you want minions? People that can just, there you go. Wouldn't you like those guys at your house? You know, secretly, everybody wants little people who can just serve them, who can be at their beck and call, who can do all the jobs they don't want to do. You know, take the washing off the line, unpack the dishwasher, repack the dishwasher, make dinner, clean up after dinner, go around the backyard and clean up all the mess the dog's made. Like, that's why we have children, right? Like, everybody secretly wants a minion. We want people to serve us, to wait on us, to do all the jobs for us we don't want to do. And Peter kind of is like that. He's happy to be served. He's happy to have some minions. Remember the first time I had my own minions? I was on an SU camp called Smash Camp, and I'd been on like a whole bunch of camps, and this was 2003, and I had arrived. I thought I was now the director of the camp. So I had 25 leaders and 100 students, and I was in charge, me and my friend Graham. I'm Mark, he's Graham, so I'm Westy, he's Clarky, right? We were both phys ed teachers. I was a phys ed teacher still. He was a pastor by then. Westy and Clarky, we're in charge, we're the directors, and we finally arrived as the number one. I thought I was number one on camp. Now, so we're the directors, we're in charge, right? So, fast forward to Monday night, it's midnight by now, we've been doing all the director jobs all day, we've been confiscating alcohol from kids who bought it on camp, we've been breaking up fights, we've been dealing with kids that are homesick, we've been separating the couples who secretly went on camp together, because it was the only way they could think about having a beach walk late at night together without their parents finding out. We've been done all those jobs. It's late, the day is debriefed, the kids are in bed, the leaders are mostly in bed, the place is kind of quiet, and we're just debriefing at the end of a big, crazy day, the first day of being in charge of Smash Camp. And then Clarky says to me, "Hey, Westy, have you seen the dining room? I mean, the place is a mess. Those kids are savages. Like, there's food everywhere and dirt everywhere, and the furniture's all messed up, and, like, someone's got to clean that up." And I said, yeah. We'll get some junior leaders to do that. We'll get some minions. I've got 25 minions. You there, clean this mess up, you know? I kind of get where Peter's coming from. Peter has no problem with people serving him. His issue is with Jesus serving him. That's where it gets creepy. That's where it gets weird. That's where it gets awkward. Like, maybe you've experienced this when someone is serving you and it gets a bit weird, it gets a bit awkward, it gets a bit too close to home. I mean, I find this sometimes if I'm at a fancy restaurant, you know, and I'm sitting there, usually across the table from the beautiful Alexia, and I sit there, and someone comes, and they get the napkin, you know this? So a waiter comes, and they get the napkin and take it off the table, and they spread it out over my lap, and it is awkward. I sit there like, do you make eye contact? Do you not make eye contact? Do you say anything? It's weird. I also get this about halfway through a wedding reception when I start to feel a bit weird that other people are coming and topping up my glass and taking away my plates and straightening my napkin for me. And we're all there being like, to the bride, you know, and having a great time. And then someone's serving us and it just gets a bit weird. And I always feel like saying, sorry, why don't you come and sit down for a while? Would you like some wine? And look, I've got this bread roll here. Like, you don't have to serve us. It just gets a bit too close. You know what I'm talking about? Maybe you get that moment two-thirds of the way through a haircut where you're like, oh, it's just getting a little bit too awkward. Like, I appreciate that's your job and you're trying to serve me, but I kind of wish you'd stop. It's just a bit weird, right? Have you had that experience? I think that's what's happening for Peter here. He's having that kind of weird moment, but it's because of his pride. He's saying, Jesus, I don't want you to humiliate yourself for me. Like, it's just a bit too weird. Like, Jesus, stop doing that. It's kind of creeping me out. Why don't you come and sit down? You don't have to serve me, Jesus. That's too... I can't follow a king who takes on the position of a slave. Like, Jesus, this is... You can't do that. I won't be part of it. It's his pride. He says, I can't follow a leader who does that. It's about his ego and his status and his sense of importance. And Jesus is teaching him that unless you deal with your pride, not only can you not serve others, but you can't even be served by them. It's Peter's pride that is the issue. And Jesus says, unless I wash you, you have no part in me. Now, the washing is figurative. So Jesus is talking about cleansing from sin. And he's saying, unless you let me humiliate myself for you on the cross. Like, I always find it funny, in the Muslim world, that you can't criticize Allah. It's blasphemy, right? It's like, not only can you make fun of Jesus, but Jesus humiliated himself on the cross. Like, that's the way he showed his greatness. That's the way he saved the world, through humiliation, through sacrifice. He took all of it on himself. And then he's resurrected and glorified, given the name above every name, and he's ascended to the highest place. But Jesus embraced that. That's the way you save the world. And maybe that's you. Maybe you're like Peter. You're like, Jesus, I can't be served by you. You can't humiliate yourself for me. That's too weird. Like, I'm just going to work really hard. I'm just going to be a good person. I'm going to do my religious workout. I'm going to serve myself. I'm going to save myself. I won't let you humiliate yourself for me. That's too weird. I'm going to do it myself. That's pride. That's self-righteousness. That is self-salvation. And Jesus says, unless you embrace my humiliating death, you can't be saved. You can't be cleansed. I have to wash you, wash away your sin, wash away your stain. And the only way for me to do that is through the cross. That's what's happening here in this passage. Jesus, come to Jesus, let him cleanse you. And if you've never done that before, if you're trying to save yourself, if you're like Peter that says, I like Jesus, but the cross thing, it kind of freaks me out a bit. It's weird, it's gross, it's embarrassing. That's the way you're saved. That's where the glory is, in the cross. Verse 12, when he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. Do you understand what I've done for you? He asked them. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so. That's what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set for you an example that you should do as I've done for you. Very truly I tell you, no servant is greater than their master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you'll be blessed if you do them. Jesus says, I've set an example for you. I have sacrificially served you. I have taken on the lowest position to serve you. I have shown my love, my power, by serving you. Do you understand? That's what I want you to do. I want each of you to put yourself at the bottom, to be prepared to embrace humiliation and shame and sacrifice for the sake of one another. Because if you do that, if you become a community who does that, then you will be blessed. Do you know when I was on that camp and I said, I'll just get some minions, Clarky. Minions! He said, actually, Westy, you know what? You and I are going to do it. Because you want us to be the leader. And you need to understand that leading means serving. If you can't serve, you can't lead. And right now, what our camp needs from us is for us to clean this mess up. Don't you think every kid on camp and every leader on camp deserves to come to breakfast tomorrow morning into a clean dining room, ready for a great day? And we're the ones that are going to do that. We're going to serve them. So we did. With no music, because it was midnight. We couldn't even put on music while we mopped the floor. All the furniture out, clean the floor, let it dry, all the furniture back in. It took like 2 hours. In the morning, we went to breakfast, you know, in bed by 2 a.m., up at 6 a.m. for the leaders' meeting. Breakfast at 7:30. Guess how many people noticed the clean dining room? Zero. Nobody walked in and went, guys, have you seen this place? Wow, Westy, Clarky, you guys are amazing. No one noticed, but we knew. We blessed them. We helped create an environment where we had a great day on Tuesday on camp. And I learned such a valuable lesson about leading and serving, that if you can't serve, you can't lead. In fact, often the way you lead is by serving. Serving in ways that gain you no status, that gain you no credits. You know, my value didn't go up. My reputation didn't grow on camp because I cleaned the dining room at midnight. Not at all. But my character did. I became more like Jesus. Okay, so let's try to put this all together. So let's kind of see where we've been so far. So far, we understand. We know that we're part of. Just go back one slide for me there, because that'd be great. Here we go. We know that we long to be part of a great community, right? And we know that we prefer to be served than to serve. We also know that sometimes that gets a bit weird and a bit creepy, and we actually aren't comfortable with being served, especially if someone is embarrassing themselves to serve us. We don't like that. Our pride gets in the way. And God knows that we struggle, like Peter, with doubt and with pride. And does God really love me? Does God really want what's best for me? Is he really on my side? And we know that, like Peter, we're prone to try and save ourselves by showing off all of our good works, our determination, our drive. So when you put all that together, here's what I think this passage is saying to us. And this is kind of the message for us today. First of all, starts top corner. The community you've always dreamed of can only be built when you wash the feet of those around you. which you can only really do when you are secure in your relationship with Jesus, which is only possible if he's washed you. And I quickly just want to explain those four things and then we'll close. The community you've always dreamed of, a grace-filled community where everyone's included, where there's no politics, that community, that church, that life group, that family is only possible when you wash the feet of those around you, sacrificially, humbly serving one another, taking off your outer garment, putting yourself at the bottom. Even if you have power, even if you should be in charge, even if you have status, emptying yourself of all of that to sacrificially serve one another in ways that gain you no credit. And that's only possible when you are secure in your relationship with Jesus. I mean, Peter, I think, would try to show his love for Jesus by his love for people. See Jesus? See everything I've done? Look what I'm doing. I love people. I love people. I love people. I work. Is that enough? Is that good enough? Can you accept me? Do you love me? Have I earned it? Have I achieved it? Peter is trying to earn God's love, I think, through hard work. This is self-righteousness, really. That's why he won't be served by Jesus. But that has to change. You have to understand that because Jesus loves you and you love him, you can serve other people. You have to be secure in your relationship with Jesus. The key to understanding this whole passage is in verse 3. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, wrapped a towel around his waist. Verse 3 is all about Jesus' security with the Father. It says Jesus knew his origin. He knew that he was from God. He knew his purpose. God had put all things under his feet. And he knew his destiny. He was returning to God. So because Jesus knows where he's come from, what he's here to do, and where he's going, he's secure. So he can humiliate himself because he's not going to lose where he's come from, his purpose, or his destiny. His relationship with God is the anchor that allows him to serve other people. You can't serve other people if you don't have a secure relationship with God. You will either serve them to gain status or you will serve them to feel superior to them. It'll still be about you. You'll serve them to show God how good you are. You can only truly serve people when you are secure in your relationship with Jesus, when you know where you've come from, that he knitted you together in your mother's womb, that he's ordained all the days of your life, that you understand your purpose, why you're here, called, commissioned, and commanded to be a disciple of Jesus. And when you understand your destiny, that you will belong to God forever, you're part of his family, you'll be part of the new heaven and the new earth. Only when you are secure in your relationship with Jesus can you truly serve people. And you can't do that unless he's washed you. Unless he's cleansed you from your sin, unless you have come to him and repented of your sin, put your faith in him and allowed him to wash your soul clean. And baptism is a symbolic demonstration of that, right? Do you want to be part of that kind of community? I do. I want to be part of a place where people love and serve one another. They sacrifice for one another, not to gain points, not to show superiority, not to earn their way to God, but because they understand that we've been washed, we've been cleansed, we've been made whole. And Jesus says, if you do this, if you understand that the way to have the community you've always dreamed of is by serving one another, if you do that, you'll be blessed. Can we pray? Let's pray. Father God, we just want to